This four-part series on the Inner Freedom Initiative is to help people that struggle with anxiety. My hope here is to break up the word anxiety into categories to help us understand what might be happening within our body when we feel anxiety surfacing. I could add even more categories to this series, but for now, I'll be looking at the common areas I see in a counseling room, and I'm calling them cognitive anxiety, transitional anxiety, trauma-induced anxiety, and viral anxiety. Anxiety can feel like a big dragon to face in your life, which is why we are going to break it up into parts and find ourselves breaking free. Grab a notepad and a pencil, because here we go. We're in the fourth episode of our series today on anxiety, a much needed topic for all of us, for people who either experience occasional anxiety or for people who experience repeated and daily experiences of anxiety. And so I'm hoping that this series meets you where you are, that you've been able to hear things within each episode that you've gravitated to, that you've heard action steps to apply in your life. And as we walk into this fourth one today, this is viral anxiety. And so if you've listened to the topic of each one, I've kind of coined words that I've placed so that we could chunk anxiety into parts. I think sometimes anxiety gets lumped all together because it is an emotion where you're feeling a lot of things and it feels like everything all at once instead of one thing. And so what I'm hoping to help people with in this anxiety series is to be able to break it up into parts so that you can put a label on what type of anxiety am I experiencing or feeling in this moment. And it might even be an eye-opener for you as a listener today that you're hearing for the first time somebody chunk up anxiety into parts, that all anxiety isn't all the same thing. That when you say the word anxiety and your friend says the word anxiety, you might be going through different triggers, different symptoms, or different expressions. There could be different reasons. And so instead of putting it all together, I'm breaking it up into these parts where our first episode was on cognitive anxiety, where I talked about cognitive thoughts and how the way that you think can really influence the way that you feel and you behave in your life. And so I wanted people to start noticing that sometimes our cognitions can be anxious and they can be fueling the fire when it comes to growing our anxiety in the way that we're thinking about situations and circumstances. The second one I brought up was transitional anxiety, and we talked about what it's like to have anxiety in the middle of major or minor transitions in our life and how we can expect that. We can take the shock factor away. And then the third one we talked about was I tried to be very kind and slow in my approach to talking to you all about trauma-induced anxiety. Anxiety that is increased to past trauma or things in your life where you're getting this reminder in a moment of something that has happened, feeling like it's happening again. So those were our three episodes leading up to this one. Make sure you check them out. Today we're tapping into viral anxiety. So you might have never have heard of this concept before. These are all kind of words I'm coining today. And viral anxiety is the verbiage that I use to help look at anxiety through this lens of a virus. I really want you to have these mental pictures of how to understand emotions, how to understand mood and attitude, because we don't have sneezing to go off of. We don't have the same physical and tangible ways to talk about emotions. And so I want to give you these physical picture images to help you understand a concept of emotion that's a little bit harder to see. And so with viruses, when we have a virus, you know, we are sneezing, we're coughing, we have rashes, we have all of these things. And just as a virus can spread easily, that when you walk into a room with someone else who has a virus, those symptoms can spread, that they can jump. And so we try to do a good job with washing our hands, with staying clean, with building up our immune system. There's all these things that we do to help our physical body not get a virus or to be prepared for a virus randomly showing up. showing up because it's not normally intentional that you would catch something. Somebody doesn't walk into a room hoping that everybody gets their cough. And so we do these things, we prepare for those types of unexpected experiences when we walk out into the world around sick season. And I want us to start having that mindset when it comes to our emotions, when it comes to our mood, when it comes to the way we feel. Because I still want you to go out into the world and live your best life and be around people and connect with others. Because I still want us to engage in relationships with other people, to surround ourselves with other people and enjoy life with others. We just have to be mindful of what we're walking into. We have to be mindful of how we feel when we walk out. And so that's the main concept that we're going to go over today with viral anxiety, is I want you to become a little more aware of what you might be feeling that you might have caught from somewhere else. That the other anxieties that we've talked about, cognitive anxiety, transitional anxiety, trauma-induced anxiety, some of those are coming from somewhere else. They're coming from within your mind. Cognitive and viral can have some overlap as well. But I want you to just begin thinking about the fact that there are times where you might get an increase in anxiety and nothing particularly has happened in your life. It's just you've been around someone who's had their own level of anxiety. So let's say I go into a room with other people and one of them or three of them each have their own experience where they're in the middle of a trauma-induced anxiety, where they're in the middle of a transitional anxiety, or they're going through their own anxious cognitive experience. And so being around those people are going to influence my way of thinking. It's going to influence my mood. But we have to find this blend of being able to both be there for people, be there for our friends, surround ourselves with other people, walking into a store and being surrounded by so many emotional, unspoken experiences, and be able to make sure that I can be around people, I can help other people, I can influence positive thinking, I can influence all of these things, but I don't have to catch what everybody has. Because if not, you're going to walk into the world and whatever the world presents itself with is going to latch onto you. And so I want you to be able to find this way of how can I both be engaged in the world and disinfect my heart in a sense. One of the things that I feel is very helpful for this in particular is I want you to do before and after check-ins. I want you to examine how do you feel about yourself before you walk into the room. And so with this exercise, I really want to stress the importance of making sure that you feel a sense of groundedness and foundational belief in who you are, in how you feel about yourself before you walk into any room, even before you walk out of your front door. Because if you don't have that grounding experience where you check in with yourself and you ask yourself and you have a firm, close relationship with your belief system and with the thought processes that you have, then you're going to walk out into the world exposed to so many viruses. You're going to walk out into the world with emotional discourse with people who are going through their own struggles, and you're going to be influenced by their struggle instead of encouraged by your own sense of self-esteem, self-worth, all of those things. And so I want to continue to ask people to start doing before and after check-ins. Before you engage in the world, before you check social media, before you even go into the grocery store or any store around the holidays, when anxiety is high, I want you to just check in with yourself. How do I feel about myself? And then also notice when I get back in my car after that experience, now how do I feel about myself? If there's been a change from before and after of how you feel about yourself, then I want you to note that you might be experiencing some viral anxiety, that you might have latched on to something from the room, something from the environment, whether somebody told you something that made you distort a belief about yourself, or maybe you were around people that were going through a highly intense anxiety situation themselves. And so you can latch on to some of that anxiety, where somebody who's very, you know, their heart rate is, you know, super high. We talked about heart rate in the last episode when it comes to anxiety. And when you're around people who have an elevated heart rate, it's hard for your heart rate to stay at rest. That again, just like a yawn is contagious, our heart rate can be contagious. So when we're around someone who's talking super fast, we're like, oh my gosh, I feel like I need to speed up. And that's one of the things that we were taught in school, in my master's program. I remember us having a whole class that it was focused on making sure that we're watching our tone, that we're watching the way, the mood that we bring into the room, all of those different things, because we were trained to kind of make sure that we don't automatically mirror what the person in front of us is experiencing or going through. That we find this, as therapists, we find this healthy balance of both sitting alongside someone, being present with them, without jumping onto the ship with them, because then we're kind of fueling their situation. When our heart rate is matching and when they talk in an elevated pace, and then by the end of the 60 minutes, I'm noticing that I'm talking at an elevated pace and now I feel a sense of urgency and rush in my life. That's when I know that what they're experiencing is latching on to me. And so I'm having to try really hard. And this is, you know, a practice in therapy we have to really work on, is I have to try very hard to be intentional about grounding myself, making sure that I'm doing a before and after check-in with myself. And then we also have to do during check-ins, where I'm checking in with, oh, I feel like I'm getting frustrated now, or I'm getting mad at the person that this person is mad at. And so we're constantly having to do these self check-ins. And so I wanted to bring that approach to you guys today, is this aspect of making sure that you're continually checking in with, am I attaching myself? Am I mirroring? Is the yawn in the room connected to me feeling like I'm about to yawn? Or where is this coming from? And so I want you to be able to do this check-in. You want to build up your emotional immune system before walking into a room and being exposed to other people's emotions and mood. So just start walking into experiences, thinking about having some sort of, I guess, emotional mask where you're there for people, but you're trying to make sure I don't want to catch it. The two questions I want to give you to think about this, because I want to make this as simple as possible to help you be able to have a very solid takeaway, is I want you to get to a place where you can answer the question or write down some things that say what I am choosing to think about myself. I want you to write that down somewhere in your life, somewhere where you can have easy access to if you're able to do it on your phone. I think that's a great way. Or if you're someone who has a journal that you carry with you, that's another great way to write these things down. I want you to write down what I am choosing to think about myself. And I use the word choose because I recognize that you're writing down things that you might not actually agree with quite yet, that you might not be a place where you write down, I'm a great person, and maybe you don't fully believe it yet, but I want you to just have these statements that say what I am choosing to believe about myself. You can even, if it's hard to write this down, you can even write the word trying. I've seen some people do that and it just helps them feel like they have permission to write statements down that they don't quite agree with yet. And so I want you to, in that case, write what I am trying to choose to think about myself. And that way you can write down these positive, these self statements, and those are going to serve as great grounding exercises for you to do during the day. And before you walk into an encounter with the public, with other people, it's a great way for you to be able to look at this list, recite those declarations, those self-grounding statements, so that you can make sure, okay, how did that feel? That felt good. These are the things I'm holding on to. So that you walk into a room and whatever the room says about you or starts to imply verbally or non-verbally, that you feel a sense of putting this shield up, of protecting yourself from where you're at. And then how I want you to add to this exercise is when you leave an environment, or maybe at the end of the day or at the end of an experience, an event that you were at, a social gathering, or whatever the case may be, At the end, how you do another check-in is you recite again what I am trying to choose to think about myself. See how it feels to say those statements, if you are able to say them with a sense of belief and confidence, or if you say those words with some ounces of doubt. Just notice that. And then I want you to write down or have some type of self-reflection where you experience what I feel others are thinking about me. And the reason I want you to write those down is because I want you to make this separation. When we're latching on to this emotional virus of something that other people are feeling and it latches on to what we're now experiencing and what we're now starting to feel, we have trouble making that separation where we lump together what they think about me is how I think about myself. And people that are very disciplined and have the skill of being grounded in who they are, in their identity and their sense of self, people who are very strong in that discipline have developed the skill of being able to make the separation that what other people think about me, how other people feel about me, is in a different category than how I feel or choose to think about myself. When you blur those together is when we latch on easily and we come very easily exposed to what other people, the emotional viruses or the emotional feelings that other people have. We put ourselves in a very vulnerable place because what other people think and feel about us, we leave room in our column, you know, that column I told you to write what I am trying to choose to think about myself. And so you might write your seven things and then you'll leave seven other lines blank on your page because you're allowing other people to fill in those blanks for you. You're going to walk into a room and you're going to allow them to tell you how you should feel about yourself. And so we want to try to avoid that as much as possible as you're moving into this emotionally free place, as you're getting to a very healthy state of the way that you view yourself and the way that you interact with others. You want to get to this place where you're able to separate that what others feel, what other people are feeling or thinking of me doesn't have to match. And it's in a separate column for what I'm trying to choose to think about myself. So the reason we write those two columns out, that you put them separately, is because I want you to see tangible evidence. And that's why writing it down helps with this so much, because your brain lumps it together. And when you put it on paper, when we put on paper, we put them in two separate columns. And when my eyes see on paper this written out in two separate columns, it sends my brain the message that we're supposed to be filing this in our computer brain system in two different places. So do you see the power in that? Is that that's how I put on paper what I'm trying to tell my brain. This is how I want you to store this information. Whereas another case is me allowing my brain to choose how it wants to filter and take in the information around me. And so I want you to kind of veer away from that as much as possible. I want you to feel like we talked about in the first episode of this series, I want you to feel like you're the head of the meeting. And so when you're at the head of the meeting in your mind, you're going to tell and dictate to the emotions, to the experiences that are taking shape. You're going to tell those experiences and those emotions where you want and how you want the information stored. That's how you reprocess information, is that you gain a sense of, here's how I'd like to store that information. And so when we separate those two columns, I want you to just be able to feel the sense of power that comes with being able to separate that what I'm choosing to think about myself is in a separate category from what I feel others are thinking about me. If you're having trouble doing that, which please know it's okay to have trouble with this right up front, but if you do notice yourself having trouble with writing things in that initial column of what I'm choosing to think about myself, then know that you're probably at a place where you need to be very cautious about walking into environments around others. That doesn't mean avoid them at all costs, so I'm not saying that or recommending that. I'm just saying make sure that you're cautious and you're mindful that if you're having trouble writing out the foundational thoughts and beliefs of what you're trying to choose to believe about yourself, then you're at a little bit of a dangerous place because you're waiting for other people and you're waiting for experiences to happen that are going to help you fill in that category. Now, if you're around really great and healthy individuals, then this is going to be something that's maybe helpful for you because you're able to add things to your column that are going to be uplifting and going to build a sense of strength and affirmation and confirmation in the things that are hard for you to believe, but that you're trying to instill. But when you're not around healthy individuals or you're around people that are also doubting themselves and they don't have great things and kind things and confident things to say about themselves, then it's easy for you to, you know, catch that virus, catch that sense of low self-esteem, catch that sense of feeling anxious about everything, feeling worried to the point of not being able to sleep at night. I think when we're around people that are anxious, one of the things that I hear, and we talked about this in cognitive anxiety in the first episode, is that anxiety gets us to get to the point of right now. It's got this sense of urgency. We talked about that in the second episode, but it also has this supposed to. It tells us what we're supposed to do. It tells us how we're supposed to feel. But we need to balance that with the fact that when we're around people that are going through their own sense of self-discovery, when we're around people who are going through their own process of who am I? How do I feel about myself? Should I have confidence? Should I have doubt? When we're around people that they themselves don't know how they want to feel grounded in their sense of who they are and how they're choosing to feel about themselves, then they're going to be around you in those environments, hoping to find answers to their own questions. And so do you see how confusing it can be that when we're talking about a viral anxiety of when anxiousness, when emotions get to a place where we can catch them much like we would catch a cold, we can walk in environments and when someone else is trying to figure out who I am and you're trying to figure out who I am and your columns are left blank, then we can utilize other people to try to fill in, well, how am I supposed to feel? How am I supposed to be? And so when we turn to the wrong person to answer those questions of our column, or maybe even it's a meeting, like a work meeting, you walk into the room of a work meeting taking place and you're allowing that meeting to dictate how you're going to feel about yourself when you leave. Let's say there's a big presentation that you have, and this presentation isn't just a presentation based off of today, that you're going to interpret the way that people respond to your presentation into how you're going to answer the question, what am I choosing to think about myself? And so we have to make sure that we're prepared for that because we don't want to allow situations and circumstances to completely tell us how to feel about ourselves. We got to separate those two columns and put that in the category, how I view or feel that other people think about me. And so you can do that presentation and then in that one column, you've got, here's what I'm choosing to believe about myself. And then in that second column, you leave the presentation jotting down how I feel others think about me so that you can write that separation and you can challenge the thought. Challenging the thought is so important with anxiety. And we talked about this blend of both. There's times where you want to combat the anxiety, where you want to challenge the cognition, challenge the thought. And there's times where you want to lean in and say, what are you trying to tell me to do? You want to listen, but also redirect. And with viral anxiety, we're doing a blend of both, where you're both challenging and you're listening. You're hearing what the thought is telling you. You're hearing what you feel other people are thinking, but then you're writing it down in that separate column so that you can tell your brain, you can give yourself the permission to say, what I feel other people think about me doesn't have to be added to the column of what I'm choosing to feel about myself, what I'm choosing to believe about myself. You can separate those into two different columns. So what are you thinking about? As we've been talking about this today, as I've been uncovering this aspect of viral anxiety, as you're starting to look at the world as having their own emotional experiences, what are you starting to think about yourself? What are you starting to believe? Can I challenge you to write it down? Maybe if you're listening to this in the car, you can take some time later to just get out a piece of paper and start this journey, start this process of separating categories, start the process of labeling anxiety when it surfaces, when you notice that your heart rate is increasing and your thought cognitions are increasing as well. Jot it down. Jot down what's happening. Stop, look, listen, and then direct, separate the different areas. Your perception will direct your interpretation of how to feel about yourself, how to feel about others, which is why it is so crucial for us all to take the time to think about how am I perceiving myself? How am I perceiving others? And make shifts in regards to your perception. Because when we make shifts in regards to our perception, there will be shifts in regards to our interpretation. I hope that you've been encouraged along this journey with us today. Please continue to join us on our discovery of freedom as we try to break the barriers in our life that are holding us back from feeling and thinking and believing that we can live emotionally free. This is Emily Funderburk. You've been listening to the Inner Freedom Initiative, where we're breaking chains in our life and walking in freedom. I hope you were encouraged and inspired today to find an area of your life that just needs to be released so that you can find freedom. Subscribe to the podcast so that you can stay tuned with us and hear more just like this one we had today.